And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello there, Eric Crane coming at you. This is Jurassic Pod, trade deadline episode. We are, as we speak, 47 hours and 54 minutes away from Thursday's 3 p.m. trade deadline. I think it's still 3 p.m. Hopefully I'm not wrong about that. Joining me, as always, the Jurassic Pod's official Winter Olympics correspondent,
oh, wow.
Holly McKenzie. Did you ever think we'd be in a place where, like, at the beginning of the relationship, you had our friendship, which friendship, all friendships are relationships. The beginning of that,
yes.
You were like basketball tunnel vision.
Yes.
And I had like all these other sports interests. And now, like, I have no idea how many medals Canada has. I have not the Winter Olympics are currently on in the background here, but like I haven't really paid much attention. And like every other tweet of yours is about how incredible these athletes are. So we've gotten to a weird place in our friendship is what I'm, or an not weird, just unpredictable place.
Yeah, I love the Olympics. And even as a kid,
I used to love them too.
I have always, like, I didn't really know what I was watching. Like, you know, I never took the time to really understand. But I just love the Olympics. I think as a kid, I didn't even care about the sports. It was just seeing people hugging and happy and like celebrating all the time. Because that's like the best part, right? Is like seeing the reactions and...
Yes, the humanity.
It's awesome. And yeah, I love the Olympics. So it's weird. I have a weird sleep schedule as it is, but as weird as like the time difference is because they're like 13 hours ahead from us. I think it's 13 hours right now. It kind of works for me. like I find myself usually still awake at 5 or 6 watching them live, and there's not a lot of people tweeting and watching at that time. Yeah.
So what's been the best moment, your favorite moment so far, if you have to pick one?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a favorite right now. I'm trying to think of what, like, sport has been my favorite moment. Obviously, I love figure skating, but I love all the skiing. Like, that stuff is so cool. Like, watching the big air events. Like,
yeah.
It's just crazy. Like, I don't understand how you learn you're good at that. And I also don't understand how, like, as a parent of, like, a young child, you're like, oh, yeah, we're going to train you in this discipline.
Yeah, like that's always been my question about, like, the aerials. How do you start training for that?
It's
like,
crazy.
Like, what is stage one after, like, okay, you know how to ski. Now you're going to do giant flips off of a huge ramp. Like, I guess it just, you start with a small ramp and you get to a bigger ramp and a bigger ramp.
But even just like, even like... just learning the, like, the moves and the tricks, it's like, how do you even teach? Like, it's just crazy.
Well, I imagine so a lot dangerous. Of that is using a trampoline, would be my guess.
I'm always amazed at how they're able to land without, like, their knees just, like, like, I imagine me, like, trying to do even, like, the most basic landing from such a height. And, oh, my goodness, they're incredible. Yeah. These athletes are amazing.
I always think about the knees of the competitors, the athletes and moguls. Like, they must be just shot, all of those knees. Like, between the moguls themselves and the jumps they have to do.
It's wild.
And then getting right back. And like that's what you're being judged on, mm-hmm. in part, is how close you keep your knees together. Like the strain. Ugh. Not.
Also,
not
speed skating. It. Incredible. What a freaking.
Short track.
Crazy. Both. I've been watching all of it. It's just the endurance of like the 5,000 meter. Like,
yeah.
How? It's just wild. It is so amazing to me to see these feats that these athletes are able to do. And I think I used to think, I would have probably said, I mean, I probably still would say that the Summer Olympics are my favorite because I really do love the gymnastics and the track and swimming.
Yeah.
But I also love the Winter Olympics. Like, I think I just love it. I love every bit of it. And I love how you can not know an athlete's name, like not know an athlete existed 2 minutes ago. And then 2 minutes after watching them, you are like fully invested, need to write it on your calendar. Like, this is their next event. Like, I need to see them. It's so cool.
Yeah, and that's why TV networks bid hundreds of millions of dollars on it, because it is like the greatest human interest story we have. Like, and it doesn't even, not to say the individual stories don't matter, but there are so many of the stories that some of them will connect with so many people. Mm-hmm. That is why they are as hot of a property as they are.
Are you noticing a trend? Whenever you ask me my favorite anything, I can't do it.
Yeah, well, you're a millennial. You can't make a decision. That that makes sense. Neither can I. It's fine. It's
like, you can do math, though. That was cool when you opened up with the hour countdown. I can't do math.
Well, it took me about 8 hours to figure out what 48 minus 6 minutes is. So I wouldn't go feeling great about it.
Do you consider yourself good at math?
No. Like, I fell off a cliff in the middle of grade 11. Like, I was good. And then, like, in the middle of grade 11, it's like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Oh. I'm not getting by on my natural ability. And I'm not inspired to work hard enough to be good at it. So that was basically it.
I took
to the point where I didn't take grade 12 math.
Oh, wow. I think I did. I feel like we had to take just like basic math. Didn't you? Don't you? Maybe not.
Not in, I mean, in Ontario, you didn't have to take it in grade 12.
Did you have to do, you only did, did you graduate after 12th grade?
Yes.
You didn't have the.
No, we were the first year
of
the double cohort. Rep to all you Ontarians born in 1984 or 85. I'm one of you.
I did half, not even half a class, like 20 minutes of a physics class and walked out and was like, I gotta get out of this. So we went to the office and was like, I need to be out. Like, I cannot take this.
I cannot take this. I get that. I was not, like, biology was the only science that really spoke.
Biology's
to me
in fun. Yeah,
way.
I like biology. But you know what I can take? I can definitely take the Raptors winning six games in a row.
I was going to have such a better segue than that.
Aww.
I was going to say, we've seen chemistry in action.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
With the Toronto Raptors play recently, they are on their second six game win streak of the season, the second six-game win streak, I believe, since New Year's Eve, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am.
You are correct.
They had another perfect week. Or not another perfect week, because I think they went 4-1 in between the last podcast. Or 3-1. Anyway, they beat Chicago at home, 127-120 in overtime. Beat Atlanta, 125-114. And then they go on the road and have a real life 64 seconds of, we don't call it garbage time here, of time played in which the result was in hand, which, you know, that felt special considering the nature of the Raptors games lately, winning by 15 on the road against the literally and figuratively defenseless Charlotte Hornets. The Raptors are cooking, Holly.
They are cooking. It's been really, really wild to see. I said they were going to win all three, remember?
Yeah. Again, you were like, I think they'll go 2-1, but I'm predicting 3-0.
Yeah. Because I honestly thought they would win in Chicago, and then I thought maybe
at home against Chicago.
At home against Chicago, and then I thought the Charlotte game would be difficult, and it was. Man, watching the Hornets, it's like every game you watch them, I just keep waiting for defense, and there just isn't any.
Yeah, it's funny. They're one of those, like that guy, like that guy, like that guy, like that guy. I like all these players. Why aren't they better? And they are pretty good. And that's why LaMelo Ball got the replacement all-star spot, among other people. And I do want to stress among other people, over Pascal Siakam. But that's neither here nor there. Maybe we'll talk about it later. In this league in which, you know, championship contenders are having existential crises, in which, you know, as we speak today, there have already been two significant trades between contenders, non-contenders, actually, you know, all four of the teams involved in the two trades today, like, not really serious contenders, but we had big names involved nonetheless. There's a lot of uncertainty, and the Raptors are just out here winning games with their 7.5-man rotation, making us a little nervous in the process. But I think, certainly having fun and playing, you know, playing a type of unexpected but delightful basketball that reminds me of that, you know, first stretch after the championship, in which it was like, how far of a step back are the Raptors going to take? Oh, wait. They are way better than most people. So, yeah. And it's not quite the same story, but it's just more exceeding expectations. And this has been a blast. And at the center of it, something we thought would be coming, but was confirmed this week, Freddie Van Vliet is an NBA All-Star, the fourth ever undrafted All-Star.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I normally have my All-Star opinions, and I don't really get too upset either way, because it's All-Star, and, you know, crazy things can happen, fan vote, et cetera, et cetera. I was so nervous watching them announce the reserves. And, of course, they went alphabetically. Van Vliet is a V. And I didn't know. I was so nervous, but my brain wasn't even like thinking about it being alphabetically as it was happening. Like, in retrospect, of course, his name was last, but I didn't, like, I was nervous and I thought, oh my gosh, if he doesn't get announced, I'm going to be really mad. And I realized, like, this is ridiculous. I shouldn't be mad, but I've wanted it for him so badly. And you were at the arena when he found out. So how did you find out, like, before the team, like, mobbed him, or, like, how did that happen?
No. So I was just sort of following along on Twitter. It wasn't on TV
right
here in Canada. And I was just, you know, NBA TV was tweeting out the All-Stars one by one, and I was following along. At some point, I figured out, Zach LaVine. When Zach LaVine was announced, I figured out that they were doing it alphabetically.
Oh, see, you're smarter than I am.
And at that point, I started to do the math of who was in and who wasn't. Right. And like, it meant that Jarrett Allen and LaMelo Ball weren't in, and Drew Holiday wasn't in. So I was fairly confident once LaVine came up that he was going to be named. But, you know, you're never certain until you see the name. Maybe Trae Young gets voted in twice.
I feel like I'm crazy, but that actually was on TV here.
Was it? Okay, I apologize.
The starters were not, but the reserves were, because I remember.
Well, we couldn't find it on the TV.
No, that's fine. I just yeah.
No, I don't want to besmirch the good name of any of the networks by saying something false. So I apologize. But nonetheless, I didn't really see the stuff in real time. I didn't hear the scream that may or may not have been William Liu's scream that alerted Fred VanVleet to making the All-Star game. You would think, like, usually in these cases, like, the players get a phone call from somebody in the league, like,
well, did
a
you
minute
see
before?
Did you see the clip the Raptors posted, kind of like the open gym moment of Fred before the game?
I have faved it, and I still haven't watched it.
Classic.
So,
that's a classic move, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, my likes are littered with things I've been meaning to watch.
Same. And the problem is, I don't even have a good system. I have likes that I go back to, like, I mean to go back, then there's tabs, then I save things to pocket, and then it's just I never end up checking it all. It showed him before the game, like, coming out of the locker room, and then, like, you know, the TV they have in the tunnel, where the broadcast, like where you
yeah, do your, yeah.
So he stopped there by Amy and was talking to Amy really briefly and was like kind of watching the TV. And then he said, like, he's like, I don't want to stay and watch this. Like, I'm gonna wait like 10 seconds and then I'm going out. And you could tell it was like a nervous moment for him. And oh, it's just crazy the way the timing was that he didn't get to like know and just had to go out and like shoot around and wait for the fans to tell him.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to risk spoiling something, I get it, but...
You probably could have called.
I would think at like 7:10, yeah. You could get on the phone with team representative, like the media relations team.
So they can just pull the player aside.
Look, you can whisper and say this has happened.
Yeah.
Cool moment for him. Fred VanVleet with the big ass week.
What a guy, man.
Is an all-star. He'll be in the three-point competition, which I'm not going to lie, I'm a bit nervous about just because his shot arcs so damn high. I'm wondering how that's going to affect him, but more time to get the brand out there, we know he's not going to be shy either with his shots or his branding opportunities. Anything stand out from sort of his response to it? Like it was really neat to see. I mean, Fred VanVleet, the best thing about him from our perspective, I think, is that he's genuine. And like, that doesn't mean being like a blank page and or an open book is what I'm looking for. Like, it doesn't mean he'll be completely honest about everything. But when he says something, you understand that he means it.
There's meaning behind it. And also, he's extremely thoughtful.
Yeah.
He's an extremely thoughtful athlete to speak with, and he gives freely of his knowledge or his experience, and always appreciate talking with him, always appreciate the time that he gives us. But just first of all, I was thrilled that DeMar was in the gym. It was really sweet to see DeMar come over and give him a hug and say, I told you so. Like, you know, it's cool to see that those relationships continue even when guys change cities or teams. Fred's journey is just ridiculous. It's hard to believe that in the span of 5 years, you know, he's gone from being undrafted to a literal all-star. And just hearing him talk about those early days, like being on his knees praying, you know, for an opportunity was like, wow. Like, it really, to me, hearing him say that, because we know Fred is an extremely confident person, as he should be, and he puts the work in, and that's why he's so confident in his game and in his journey. But to hear him like talk and acknowledge those early moments where he didn't know if he was going to get the opportunity, like all he needed was the opportunity, but he didn't know if that was going to come.
Yeah, it was such an interesting way of framing it, because he was like, you know, I'm always confident in myself, but when he had some say in not being drafted. Like, he was certainly, when he wasn't going in a certain position, his team was trying to point him in the position of being undrafted so he could have at least a little bit of choice about where he ended up. And to do that and to still be in the position on day one or day two of training camp of thinking, to some degree, did I make the right choice? Like, he didn't articulate it like this, but like, he ends up in a situation where you have a all-star point guard, you have a veteran backup in Corey Joseph, and you have a, you know, point guard of the future who was drafted 1 year ago in DeLon Wright. And in VanVleet framing that as, you know, I had confidence in myself. I'm on my knees praying because I need people to at least notice what I'm doing out there and value what I'm doing out there. And you can't, like, as well as he might have played in that training camp, you can't know that it's going to be it will be enough to get them to keep him. And that, you know, retracing those steps, really cool. It's hard not to be really pleased for him. I don't know how much more there is to say. He's obviously deserving based on his year, and especially, you know, the first 30 or 35 games or so. He was the player most responsible in keeping the Raptors afloat so they can do what they're doing now.
And it was just really cool to see their response around the league, whether it was on TV, like the hosts of the TNT show or Draymond or other players around the league just being really genuinely excited for him and happy for him is really cool. It shows the respect that he has, you know, of everyone around the league and the fact that he has earned it. It's just awesome. Super happy for him.
Yeah, he's a guy who's had the respect of players for so long. Like dating back to the finals. I mean, before the finals, but really the finals, if you remember the aftermath, I believe it was Kevin Durant who said, like, that guy's so impressive to me, he's going to have a 15-year career just because he does thing X and thing Y and thing Z. And to go from there to this player's an all-star is obviously a huge, huge leap. But, like, he was, you know, he was your favorite players, if not favorite player, one of your favorite players' players. And to go from there to being respected by the coaches and, you know, maybe one day getting that, you know, fan support that allows you to be in the starter conversation, really cool and well-deserved.
And saying Kyle returned to the floor. Kyle Lowry returned to the court. Very, very glad to see him back. In his first post game after his return, at the very end of his media press conference, he shouted out Freddie, and that made me want to cry.
Yeah. And Fred, as you would expect, very eloquent about Kyle, saying he sort of gave him the answers to the test, and it's Kyle's success that drives him, or in part drives him, and he still wants to be better than Kyle, but... you know, it's that perfect blend of competition and friendship that allows a player in Fred's position with Fred's mindset to strive. Just one of his story will always be one of the more memorable and nicer ones in the league. And this isn't an ending, but it is certainly a signpost and a thing to remember along the way. And saying that, he might be the second most important Raptor right now because Pascal Siakam is bawling out of control.
I could feel where you were going, and I was like, I'm not going to mess up this segue. Just going to sit back and let him get there.
Yeah. since December 28th, I had this in my story last night that was mostly on Chris Boucher, on Monday night, I should say. But Siakam is averaging since December 28th, 23.3 points, 9.5 rebounds, and 6.4 assists per game. When you add those numbers up, you get something like 39.2. I don't know. But there are only eight players in that span who are averaging like a higher combination of those stats than Pascal Siakam. They are Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Ja Morant, Trae Young, LeBron James, James Harden, Luka Doncic, and Nikola Jokic. And of those players, I'd say Embiid and Giannis, legitimate defensive difference makers. The other guys, I mean, LeBron can be when he wants to be, but, you know, he's certainly not max efforting his defensive impact right now. All those other guys range somewhere between fine and not fine. So Pascal Siakam, this is my long way of saying Pascal Siakam has been one of the very best players in basketball over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, he had 24, 11, and 8 against the Hornets, 33, 9, and 4 against Atlanta, 25, 13, and 7 against Chicago. Again, these are just like the offensive side of things. He's just making such an impact, and it's like we talked about it a little bit last week, like you'd be surprised at his usage in the fourth, but then you realize how many plays he's making, like his passes and setting his teammates up. He has just been incredible, and it's awesome to see. It's really awesome to see after him having to miss so much time at the start of the season, and obviously we all know how, you know, basically the last 2 years have gone for him. Yeah, the combination of Pascal and Fred is pretty good.
Yeah, when your best players are both playing at a legitimate all-star level, you have a chance to be pretty good. Of course, Pascal Siakam not named to the all-star team, and as I mentioned up top, LaMelo Ball was named as the replacement for Kevin Durant. I think, you know, we see the logic of that. Like Charlotte, as it was, Charlotte was the only winning team without an all-star representative. And I don't necessarily think that should be the way the decision is made, but like barring an obvious candidate, like a truly, truly snubbed, you know, double underline candidate, I can see why that might have been a tiebreaker. In my heart of hearts, first of all, I think Jared Allen was robbed. I think, mm-hmm. like, if we're talking about the biggest quote unquote snubs, I think Jared Allen is number one for me. Just because I think, frankly, he's been the most impactful and important player on the Cavs. And
Who would you have swapped?
So here's what I would say. Like, in my heart of hearts, I have, if I'm just picking the most important players mm-hmm. in the first 50 games of the season or whatever, I would probably have Jared Allen and Pascal Siakam in over Chris Middleton mm-hmm. and LaMelo Ball. Beyond that, I could also see the argument for Drew Holiday over one of those two guys, or maybe even Darius Garland. But I'm not Siakam and Holiday are sort of 2A and 2B for me mm-hmm. in terms of the guys in the East who should have gotten in. I would probably lean Siakam because his just peak has been so impressive, so top level, all NBA level, whereas Drew Holiday is like a really important player and a really great player, but it's not quite the all around brilliance that Pascal Siakam has had. But like the first change I would have made is having Jared Allen in yeah. over either Ball or Middleton for me.
I think the thing with LaMelo is, and whether or not this should come into play, you know, you can have your own opinions. He's just a perfect all-star game player.
Absolutely. He's electric, why I'm not, it's one of many reasons I'm not that mad about it. It's err on the side of putting like a player who will be tossing awesome alley-oop yeah. passes all
like,
game.
It just,
like,
that's fine. That didn't surprise me. Still would love to see Pascal there somehow, but yeah, agree with you on both of those notes.
But the Raptors will take the play and not the nod. It is fine. He has been awesome. Mm-hmm. And frankly, he's kind of been the point guard of this team more and more, or at least the guy making more of the decisions with the ball. Like they're getting Fred VanVleet off the ball in crunch time, a ton, and it's really working.
I was just going to say, it's really cool to see how Pascal's game has evolved in that way. Like, he's always been, you know, an okay passer, but like to see the way that he knows his teammates now and is setting them up is just, it has succeeded. That's not the word I'm thinking of.
Surpassed.
Thank you, brain. Thank you, Aaron.
I knew where you were going.
It has surpassed what I would have expected at this point of the season, and it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and it unlocks what the Raptors want to do, right? Because like, as good as Fred VanVleet is, like, his brilliance is not in playmaking or finishing at the rim. He is a good playmaker. He is a fine, certainly nobody would say his finishing at the rim is his best quality. He's fine, but not elite by any stretch at that. It's his shooting and it's his defensive reads, and it's, you know, that really make him stand out. And the Raptors finding a way to like invert traditional positionality depended on one of these big dudes, and hopefully multiple of them, but at least one of them to be able to make these sorts of plays for his teammates. And I don't think, you know, Siakam is a surprise in that he's been the first player to really be able to do that on a consistent basis. Like, we've seen some nice passes, kickout passes from OG Anunoby, but like, he's certainly, his hit rate is probably, not probably, it's definitely not where Siakam's is. But that's the idea, is you get Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent, your two best shooters, off the ball for one of these guys who can see over the defense to make plays. Mm-hmm. And then you are, as they say, cooking with gas.
Is that OG, the saying? I don't
know. It is a saying. I don't know.
Isn't
if it's
it cooking
saying.
With grease?
No.
Is that
I
not
don't
a
think
saying?
So.
I feel like
there are grease fires, but I don't think you cook with it. Like, anyway, we can come back to this one, but I maybe it's one of those things that like by region is different.
I think it might.
But
be.
I have never heard cooking with grease in my entire life.
I'm seeing it says, is it cooking with gas or cooking with grease? Now we're cooking with grass. Now we're cooking with gas. Now we're cooking with grease. Now we're cooking with heat. I don't know. I would need to spend more time looking to
see. Yeah, I'm betting it's the sort of thing that depending on where you are and how you've grown up, you use a different phrase and they mean the same thing, which means you have fuel to do the cooking.
Because the Raptors have fuel to do
the cooking. And they're cooking something spicy, Holly.
Wow, spicy. Nice.
You have here OG and Gary continuing to do the things they do. Do I have any thoughts on either of those two? My thoughts are that they are good. I don't have like a ton of novel
Listen,
thoughts.
Listen, I think
what I would say is OG's defense, which I thought was not up to it. Not that it was bad by any means, but not up to his, like, I don't know if you want to say standard or potential, because I think most Raptors fans think this could be one of like the top five perimeter defenders in the league. Like, I think that's his upside defensively. I think we are getting closer to that, whereas I think earlier in the season, for a multitude of reasons, maybe was getting used to the bigger offensive load. He certainly had the hip flexor injury that required recovering. But I think, like, especially in that game against the Bulls, not that DeMar had a bad game, he had a very good game, but I thought like there was such a noticeable difference between when OG was on him and when somebody else was on him.
I think for me, the biggest thing that has surprised me has just been OG coming up with really big shots late when the team has needed it. And then when I look at the box score after the game, it's like, oh, he has 20 points, but I can only recall him hitting like three or four memorable
What's
shots.
Funny is in a few of those games, like OG has gone into the fourth quarter and he has like 6 or 8 points and he's like 2 for 7 or 3 for 8 or something like that. It's like, oh, OG is not really having much of an impact on this game. And then like, oh, here's a stat. Like in that Bulls game, the 2 threes he hit in overtime were just massive shots. And I think one of them was a step back. So like, I think, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say they lose that game.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So these are, you know, very good starters, certainly. And both with obvious room to grow. Holly?
I thought you were going to say something else, so I was waiting. Sorry. They've been awesome. And obviously, so have the Raptors. So my next question was,
coincidentally,
are the Raptors good?
I'd like to know what's happening in my kitchen, first and foremost, but...
I wasn't sure. I thought you were in the basement, so I was wondering if
I am in the basement.
Oh, which, no, you
which,
are.
Which makes me wonder if my wife is home or if my cat is causing havoc. we'll have to wait until the end. Oh, my wife is home, so that's good.
Personally, I was hoping for Nico to be having... herself
well
an adventure
a time yeah what was your question, Holly? I'm sorry, I admittedly got distracted.
Are the Raptors good?
I think that ties into our next discussion, which will be about the trade deadline. I am sorry, and I must say you acquitted yourself very well last week in having a discussion that you didn't want to have. The Raptors good? Well, as it stands, they are in sixth place.
Mm-hmm.
That is good.
What were our predictions at the beginning of the season? I said fifth. What did you say?
You said fifth?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I said, like, I don't know if I predicted.
I feel like you had a big range.
I said they would lose in the play-in tournament.
In the play-in, yeah.
So the Raptors are in sixth place. In offensive rating, they are 13th. In defensive rating, they are 15th. So that, you know, it still not screams out, but it still suggests this is like an average team based on the entire season. And why I want to stop short of saying the Raptors are good, all caps, exclamation mark, is because, like, in that, like, the five games, and I'm in the process of writing my trade deadline piece, mm-hmm. in the five games leading into the Charlotte game. So they obviously went 5-0 because they're on a six-game winning streak now. That's how streaks work. But in those five games, they played 39 clutch minutes, which, if you do the math, is almost 8 clutch minutes per game, which obviously necessitates the plague of overtime, since mm-hmm. in regulation, there can only be a max of 5 clutch minutes per game, as defined by the NBA. They won those minutes, 76-64, and, like, that's a healthy margin, but I also think, like, by that margin, the likelihood is that they would have dropped a game or two among those five. So, like, even in the context of them being fully healthy, they've needed, you know, and they have earned this winning streak, but they have needed more than their share of luck to come out with the wins that they have. Saying that, this is, like, the longest look that we've got at a fully healthy Raptors mm-hmm. team. I think some of those wins, particularly the two wins over Atlanta, they were more in control of and then sort of lost the plot a little bit down the stretch before taking over again. Even the Bulls game, they were in control of before mm-hmm. the fourth quarter, and they sort of lost it a little bit there. So I still... If I had to predict, I think they'll end up in the play-in tournament, but they are also a team that I believe has a bigger shot than I thought to begin the season at mm-hmm. giving any team a lot of trouble in a playoff series, and in the right team, they could take a series off of, mm-hmm. which is that good? Like, I'll leave it up to you to define that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I feel like you have to look at what you thought the team was going to be or what outside expectations were of the team heading in to, like, I think they have exceeded that for a lot of people.
I mean, certainly this recent play has.
That's what I mean.
If I remember, the over-under for the season was something like 36.5. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're most of the way there already. They are, 29-23 with 30 games left. So, let's say even, you know, somewhat negatively, they go 15-15 to close out the season. They end up as a 44-win team and comfortably over that over-under. So
let's go 50 wins. Let's be a 50-win team, guys. Let's do
it. Yeah, no, they could go 21-9 in their last 30. It's totally possible. They do have a road-heavy schedule mm-hmm. coming up, which they have already started.
The Raptors have been pretty good on the road because...
Yeah. The time they struggled the most this year is when they were at home in front of a full
arena.
At home with fans. So, like, who wants that? Just give them road games or empty arenas. And you can't beat this team. But I think, I don't know the extent to which you want to answer your own question, but I think the are the Raptors good question heavily has to influence the trade deadline
question. The next 48 hours or 60 hours or whatever, however many
the one
years.
Thing like I think you embrace, and even I like to embrace sometimes, like being a captive of the moment. Like you want to, especially when the moment is like this, you want to enjoy a 6-game winning streak. You want to enjoy, you want to think anything is possible because of the way they're winning games.
Wanting to believe that anything is possible? No.
Yeah. Never. But it's Bobby Webster's and Masai Ujiri's and Dan Tolsman's and Teresa Rush's and all those people, the front office's job, to look at things more holistically. So with that in mind, Holly, are the Raptors good? And how much do you let both how the Raptors are playing and maybe the way the East is playing out a bit differently than we thought, very differently in certain places, how much do you let that impact what the Raptors do over the next 48 hours?
Yeah, well, I feel like I am more in the favor of doing something now than I would have been.
I should add, Holly, sorry to interrupt. I just got off about 2.5 hours ago. Bobby Webster spoke to the media and pretty much ruled out doing something big, by which I mean like trading a core piece. But, you know, other than that, they're active, and he acknowledged that because of the win streak, they're having a different conversation than they might have been having the last two or 3 weeks. I think that's sort of important information for the listener to have. I apologize for disrupting, interrupting.
No, definitely. I was going to ask, I sort of had that in my notes, just that Bobby talked. Did he say anything? Yeah. Was that how I put it? But so
that is basically what he said.
Yeah. And that's basically what I was going to say, too. About a month or so ago, I probably would have leaned more toward not making any sort of move. But now that you're seeing how the team is playing right now and the potential that the core has, glad to hear they're not like making any, you know, crazy big move or moving a core piece. But yeah, if there's an opportunity to add a player that could help you down the stretch, would love to see it. The question for me becomes, we talked about this a bit in recent weeks. Do you want a big man? Do you want a perimeter player? Like, I personally said I would like a shooter or someone that can like create their own shot over trying to, you know, have another like traditional big. But I feel like the team may be going in the opposite direction. I don't know. Your thoughts?
I'm not sure that's true. I think... I feel
like the rumors based on like what the team is interested in.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't say the team.
Jakob Poeltl has been a name associated with the Raptors, and I don't want to go down every name. He makes some sense as a big because he has the size to do some, you know, low post guarding, but he has enough agility so you don't have to completely change who you are defensively. And I think that's why his name's being associated. In general, like, I think the Raptors are going to, like, barring a real, like, star becoming available, and again, like, we were 90 minutes removed from a trade that has Tyler Haliburton going to the Pacers and Domas Sabonis going to Sacramento, and for whatever it's worth, I think that makes two potential Raptors targets, Harrison Barnes of the Kings and Miles Turner of the Pacers. I think they're both less likely to move now because neither of those is a we're building toward the future move. Like the Pacers obviously a bit more just because Sabonis is more in his prime than Haliburton. But, you know, they also could have gone the Sabonis route of like, give me your picks for Sabonis. And they didn't. They got somebody who, you know, reshapes their future and reshapes their core, but it's not like we're okay losing for the next 5 year or 3 years trade, which is why I think, and the reporting seems to indicate that Miles Turner probably isn't going anywhere anymore. But I think it's not to my original point, which happened like 9 minutes ago. I think it's sort of like the draft in which the Raptors are thinking best available player. And that obviously comes at a price point. It's like, you know, if there's the best available player at Goran Dragic and a first round pick, is that player, you then have to do the math, is that player so much better than the player you might get at Dragic and two second rounders, that it's worth giving up the first rounder. And that's the type of math they're going to do. And I don't think that necessarily tilts them in one direction or another. But I think, like, those are the equations they're doing. It's not a positional thing necessarily. In fact, like, I'm fairly confident saying it's not a positional mm-hmm. thing. It is a price point, to some extent, a fit, like, in terms of skills and the style they want to play, more than, like, we need... Because I think that would be the biggest mistake the Raptors could make, is, like, we need a center for this series mm-hmm. against Joel Embiid. Therefore, we will pay X price for that.
Right.
Because, as I just said with our friend Will Liu on Sportsnet, like, yeah, the Raptors aren't very well equipped to defend Joel Embiid and beat the Sixers, although they've given him, God knows, all the trouble he can handle yeah. over the last few years. But, like, so in some ways, that's the worst possible matchup. In other ways, it gives you one hell of an answer to your how far can this, you know, no 7-footer, no real true big swarming, pressuring defense take us. Like, that's almost the best information you can get is against a team like that. And I think there is more value in that than in chasing right now, even if the Eastern Conference looks, whatever phrase you want to use, open or weaker or more chaotic. There's more value in finding out more about yourself than in maximizing the potential to get to the second round this year.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Thank you.
I didn't know where you were going at first, but I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sorry for saying it in the most labored way possible.
No, I really quickly wanted to just say, since we're talking about trades and trades that have happened, Norm Powell back to LA. He's home.
Yeah, good for him.
And he seems absolutely thrilled about it.
Yeah, I think he'll be thrilled. He had a big first game against the Bucks.
When has Norm had a big game against the Bucks?
Yeah. I think they lost, but, you know, Norm's always good. Norm's 3-point shooting against the Bucks. Yeah, it's funny. I talked to him for that Fred VanVleet story, and he jokingly, I think, I asked him how his dogs were doing, and he jokingly complained about the rain, the dogs not loving the rain. And now
they'll have lots of sun.
Yeah, as said by our friend Albert Hammond Sr., it never rains in Southern California.
Also, you mentioned the piece that you wrote on Fred VanVleet, where you talked to a bunch of people. Just want to take this moment to say that Fred shouted that piece out in the press conference we were talking about earlier, saying it was a great piece. So that's nice.
Yeah, that was new.
Fred, he's not like the other NBA players. he's a cool NBA player.
No, I mean, it was very nice of him to do. And, you know, I think we try not to be too dependent on external validation. At the same time, we don't want to feel like we're, you know, not to get too inside baseball, but, you know, writers don't want to feel like they're writing into some void and just throwing content out there to be consumed over and over again. And,
well, especially, you know, a piece like...
I wasn't writing it for Fred to enjoy. I was writing it for readers to enjoy, but that, like, it made an impact on him. Lets me know that I got to something, you know, real about him. So I'm very glad for that.
Yeah, it was very cool to hear him say some of the memories he had even forgotten about until he was reading them in your piece, which was really cool. And yeah, what you said is true. But when you're writing a piece, especially a piece like that, where you're talking to a bunch of people from someone's life and childhood and past, yeah, there's no better way to know that, like, you captured them than them saying, oh yeah, I forgot about that until I read this great piece. So that was cool. And also just, yeah, again, shows that Fred is a super thoughtful, cool guy.
Absolutely. Let's get to some quick Twitter questions. Brenda, our old friend Brendan Stewart asks, is Holly so wrapped up in the current vibes that she somehow predicts a 10-0 record over the next five games? I'll answer that. The answer is yes. Naya, who helpfully wrote out the pronunciation of her name, so thank you, Naya, and I hope I'm not botching it, asks, what is the fanciest dunk that you think OG will ever do?
Oh, wow.
Or is pin straight legs like entering a body of water from a great height just too ingrained / energy efficient?
Wow. Well, I would like to read her, I would like to read her just go long on an OG dunk because I enjoyed that descriptor there. honestly, I thought that his dunk the other night, why am I blanking on who he dunked on?
It was like a two-handed dunk over somebody, right?
It was someone.
Was it over DeMar?
No, it wasn't DeMar. Oh my gosh. Charlotte, Atlanta, Chicago. Why am I blanking? You're blanking too. This is great. Great time.
Yeah,
brains.
Well, let's not spend any more time there. Anyway, it was a two-handed dunk over somebody.
But it was a very...
He dunked, I remember saying he dunked through somebody.
Yeah, same.
I think it might have been Plumlee, but I'm not positive.
Anyhow, I don't think it was. I think it was... Whatever. Whatever.
Let's not spend any
anyway,
more time.
Anyway, okay.
It.
This is just annoying me. That I can't remember and that neither can you, because usually I can depend on you to fill in my brain gaps. He was very emphatic. Like, the dunk itself was, like, you know, an OG dunk. But his face, like, I actually mentioned to someone, he had, like, this, like, almost roar on his face. And we never really get to see him, like, emote a lot. So it was a very aggressive and, like, you could see the reaction on his face as he was dunking. And I noticed that. And I don't know if we're going to see anything more than that. That may be the peak. Thoughts?
Yeah, and also I love, like, the OG reverse dunk so much. Like, it just seems like a pull-up at the gym. Yeah. It's like an awesome display of...
He's so, like, strong.
Just strengths, yes.
Yeah.
Like, low, like, casual strengths. Like, we'll definitely never see a windmill. Definitely.
Imagine if we did.
I can't even, like, no ball, like, ball trickery, I think the thing about OG is whatever he does, it has to be functional. That's
you know
the thing.
Who would
so, like,
never use props for a dunk in a dunk contest? OG and an OB would never use props.
Yeah, he would just, like, just try to repeatedly break the glass with two-handed dunks. Or maybe not even that emphatic. Maybe if it has to be functional, like, maybe it's switching hands in midair, which is obviously really hard to do. Like, maybe he goes from his right hand to his left hand to avoid a shot blocker. I'm trying to answer this question. I it would not be like a sex, like, any dunk of his that, like, made the highlight reels would have to be because of the defense that was, like, attempted to be being supplied, I think.
Because he was just concerned with getting the 2 points and not everything else. Yeah.
Our old friend Shave asks, what's going to happen first? Scotty, sometimes he's Scory, but his name is Scotty.
Scory Scotty.
Is he going to throw a look pass? And that's the opposite of a no look pass. Or will I go a full podcast without saying speaking of? I don't think I've said speaking of this podcast. So Shave, you can shove it.
I think I did when I did the speaking of.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but when you disrupted my great.
The segue.
Scott asks, how will COVID impact the championship parade?
Ooh, depends on where that parade will be, because it feels like rules are very different.
They're taking it from Tampa all the way to Toronto, all the way up the I-95. Tim, and this is the last one we'll get to, and it's another inside baseball question. What's the angle for doing a presser with someone like Bobby, who tends to say not very much despite a lot of words? What's the art of prodding to get what you want for stories? So my main thought is we're not going to find out who he's trading for.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, But you can, and I think we did, we find out what the type of thinking is that informs what they're going to do. And by saying things like, you know, sure, we have flexibility to take on money at times this year, by saying something like Goran Dragic isn't being totally forthcoming about where he wants to go, that lets me know that it might be difficult to trade him mm-hmm. to a team that would have expectations of using him as opposed to buying him out. Just by saying, look, we're having a different conversation now than we were 3 weeks ago, that lets me know that maybe they're, you know, more inclined to be aggressive than they were 3 weeks ago. So it's about getting the general mindset more than the specifics. And I actually think if you go back and listen to Webster's press conference, you can find out quite a bit mm-hmm. about what the thinking is, while acknowledging that, you know, the guy, and by the guy, I mean every single executive in this league, doesn't say something in public without full knowledge of what it portrays
right.
the Raptors' position or their team position to be in. Like he said, when asked if they have to trade Dragic, he basically said, no, we don't have to. And they don't have to, but like obviously it's not a very common opportunity to trade a big contract that is earning you zero on-court production at the moment for a piece that will eventually, or hopefully at least, provide you that on-court production. So they're never going to portray desperation or neediness or anything like that. But beyond that, I think you can learn some key things.
Yeah, I think you have to go into it knowing you're not going to get a direct answer to the direct question that you want. So you try to ask questions around that will shed some light on the different factors that can then you can put the pieces together to kind of tell you what they're saying without actually directly saying it is usually the way to go. The more information, the better. So even if you're not getting that direct, like straight line question to what you want, all of the little pieces. All the pieces matter.
Shout out Jonathan Abrams. Up next, the Raptors play Oklahoma City on Wednesday. They're in Houston on Thursday, which doubles as the trade deadline game. They're in Denver. They're home to Denver on Saturday. And I believe they're in New Orleans on Monday to face CJ McCollum. Jonas Valanciunas, probably, and the New Orleans Pelicans. So what are we predicting here, Holly?
I said, are they going to push the streak to 9 games? Could they dare?
So, listen, they lost to OKC last time. I believe that our old friend Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is out.
Lou Dort may also be out. I'm not sure if he played last
well,
night.
Go on.
But he missed the previous game because of a nasal fracture, so I think he's day to day.
Yeah. Ken Birch came back. That's a thing. Speaking of nasal fracture. Oh no! I broke my speaking of streak. Shave, you got me again. we'll try better next week. It's hard not to predict wins against Oklahoma City and Houston, although I think both have been a little spunkier lately than they might be given credit for. But I think the Raptors should take care of both of those. I'll say they will beat Denver before losing in New Orleans.
I think Denver's on a back-to-back as well. So
yeah, that's my official prediction. 3-1. If we're including the New Orleans game, which I think we are, because that's on a Monday, which means we'll probably record on a Tuesday. How about you?
What do you think I'm going to predict?
4-0 for the Raptors in the next 4 games, says Holly McKenzie, running their streak to 10, the first double-digit winning streak since the Raptors won 15 in a row.
Wow.
Back in the halcyon pre-COVID days. the salad days of our lives, Holly.
Wow.
Other than that, I mean, we got a trade deadline.
My other prediction was, will the trade look different after the OKC game? So, after the deadline.
Will the Raptors look different?
Will the team
Yeah.
I'm trying to rush off because I know you have an appointment very soon, so forgive me.
I think they're making a trade. The question to me is whether a first round pick is involved or not. But I'd be very surprised if they don't turn Dragic into a guy who can contribute over the next few seasons.
Agreed. And
that's not sexy. I mean, it depends. Like, there's not a ton of players out there, especially if Turner and Barnes don't move, that I think are objectively worth it. But that doesn't mean they don't say, well, in this case, it's worth moving.
Was that an alarm or was that your phone?
That was my phone. So should wrap up here.
Let's wrap.
I think a trade is coming. Holly, you also think a trade is coming. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what the roster looks like, we will be here next week to discuss how the Raptors are playing and how the Raptors look in terms of their style, but also just the composition of their roster. Holly, continue to enjoy the Olympics.
Thanks.
And try to get some sleep while you're at it.
I'll try.
Thank you very much. Thank you, listeners. Enjoy the next few games. Try to stay sane during and leading up to the trade deadline. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.